The Catcher Podcast conversations for the curious, essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of eCatra AI. Welcome to the deep dive.
Today we're jumping into something that sounds maybe a bit intense, but honestly, it underpins huge parts of the global economy. We're talking mathematical finance.
That's right. And specifically, we're looking at a foundational work. Mark S. Joshi's Mathematical Finance, Theory and Practice.
Yeah, this book is really something.
It really is. I mean, this isn't just theory for academics. Think of it more like the architectural blueprint for the entire multi-trillion dollar derivatives market.
Wow, okay. Blueprint. I like that.
It answers that fundamental question. How do you put a hard number, a price, on a contract whose payout depends entirely on an uncertain future? Think, you know, future oil prices, stock options.
Things that feel inherently random.
Exactly. How do you price that randomness in a logical, consistent way? This book lays out how it's done. Right. And it sounds pretty heavy, I won't lie. Stochastic calculus, partial differential equations. But look, our mission here today is to sort of cut through that. We want to pull out the core ideas replication, this thing called no arbitrage and risk neutral pricing without, you know, needing a PhD to follow along. Get you the essence.
And the challenge Joshi took on was massive. It's bridging this gap, this huge chasm between very abstract math.
Like advanced probability theory.
Right. That kind of thing. Bridging that to the practical realities, the pressures of the trading floor where things need to work and work fast.
Which means the theory itself had to be grounded. Joshi knew, didn't he, that even the most brilliant math is basically useless in finance if you can't actually implement it.
Absolutely. If it can't run reliably in a computer program, often in milliseconds,
yeah,
it's just an idea.
So speed, computational feasibility, they're not afterthoughts. They're baked into the discipline itself.
They have to be.
Okay, before we dig into the concepts, let's talk about the author, Dr. Mark S. Joshi, a major figure in quantitative finance, sadly passed away back in 2017.
He really was a towering figure. And what made him, I think, so unique was his background. He had this dual expertise.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he started with a PhD in pure math from Oxford. So incredibly rigorous theoretical grounding.
Deep abstract stuff.
Exactly. But then, and this is key, he spent years working in the trenches as a senior quantitative analyst.
A quant. Ah, the famous quant.
At big investment banks like RBS. He saw how it actually worked day to day.
That practical experience, that must have made all the difference. He wasn't just talking theory. He knew where the models broke down in practice.
Precisely. He understood implementation challenges, computational bottlenecks, the messy reality of market data. He wasn't just teaching the what, he was teaching the how, and crucially, the why it sometimes fails.
He could translate, basically, take these super abstract mathematical ideas.
Things like continuous time stochastic processes, martingales.
Yeah.
Real heavy stuff.
And turn them into practical frameworks. Frameworks that people could actually use to price complex financial products and, importantly, know how to build the code for them.
That's his legacy, I think. Bridging that gap from pure theory to usable code. It's why the book is still so relevant.
Okay, so that perspective directly informs the book's core idea, its central premise.
It does. According to Joshi, the entire edifice of derivative valuation rests on one single powerful economic idea. The no arbitrage principle.
No arbitrage. You called it the law of gravity for finance earlier.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to think about it. It simply states that there are no free lunches, no risk-free profit opportunities lying around.
Or if one pops up, the market sniffs it out and eliminates it almost instantly.
Instantly. Because if you could make guaranteed money with zero risk, everyone would pile in and the opportunity would vanish. That pressure enforces the principle.
Okay, so if no arbitrage is the law, what's the mechanism it enables for pricing?
That mechanism is replication. This is the genius insight. The price of a derivative isn't some guess about where the market is headed.
Right, it's not prediction.
No, it's the cost of building a synthetic copy. A portfolio made up of the underlying asset, like the stock, and some risk-free borrowing or lending.
Like cash in a bank account.
Exactly. You construct this portfolio so that its payoff perfectly matches the derivative's payoff, no matter what the market does, up, down, sideways.
So you create a perfect twin for the derivative using basic building blocks.
Precisely. And the cost to set up that twin portfolio today? Well, that must be the fair price of the derivative.
Because if the derivative cost more than the twin, you could sell the derivative, build the twin, and pocket the difference risk-free. Arbitrage.
And vice versa if it costs less. The no arbitrage law forces the prices to be equal.
Okay, that makes sense. It's a very structural argument.
It is. And that leads to the next conceptual leap, which is kind of mind-bending, but incredibly powerful. Risk-neutral pricing.
Ah, this sounds interesting. Risk-neutral.
Yeah. Since the price is locked down by this replication cost, we actually don't need to model how real investors feel about risk, you know, their risk aversion, their individual expectations. That stuff is complicated and messy.
Okay. So how do we calculate the price then?
Mathematically, we could perform this amazing trick. We pretend we're in a different imaginary world, a world where all investors are completely indifferent to risk. They just don't care.
A risk-neutral world.
Yeah, exactly. In this simplified world, calculating the expected future payoff of the derivative becomes much, much easier. We use a special set of risk-neutral probabilities.
Artificial probabilities.
Yeah, they're not the real-world probabilities, but they're consistent with the no-arbitrage prices. You calculate the expected payoff using these probabilities, and then you just discount that expectation back to today's value using the risk-free interest rate.
And the amazing thing is, even though you did the calculation in this fake risk-neutral world,
the price you get is the correct no arbitrage price in our actual messy risk-averse world.
Wow, that's elegant.
It's incredibly elegant. It turns a potentially intractable problem into something solvable, all thanks to that initial replication argument.
So the book takes you on this whole journey from simple logic to advanced math to practical tools.
That's the goal. Probability, stochastic calculus, Monte Carlo, finite differences. It connects all the dots.
All right, let's walk through those stages a bit more. Joshi starts with the basics, right? The foundational intuition.
He does. He uses the binomial model. Think of it as finance with training wheels on.
Okay.
It's a world where time moves in steps, like day one, day two. And in each step, the stock price can only do one of two things. Go up by a certain amount or go down by a certain amount. Very simple.
Up or down. Discrete steps. Got it.
In that simple setting, Joshi shows you step by step how replication works. You can literally calculate exactly how much stock to hold and how much cash to borrow or lend at each step.
To perfectly duplicate the option's payoff at the end.
Exactly. And you see how you have to adjust your holdings at each step as the stock moves. That's dynamic hedging. You're actively managing the risk away.
So you prove the concept works cleanly in this toy model. That builds the intuition.
It does. But then you hit the wall. Real markets aren't neat, discrete steps.
No, they're chaotic, moving constantly, randomly.
Precisely, which necessitates the big mathematical jump, moving to continuous time. To model prices that wiggle around randomly all the time, you need more advanced tools.
This is where the heavy math comes in.
This is it. You need stochastic calculus. And the core building block for modeling that continuous random movement is something called Brownian motion.
Brownian motion, like the jiggling of pollen grains in water that Einstein studied?
That's the exact analogy. It's a mathematical model for pure, continuous, random wandering. We use it as the driving force for stock prices.
Okay, but if the stock price is following this random, jagged path, and a derivative's value depends on that stock price, how do you track how the derivative's value changes? Normal calculus doesn't work on jagged lines.
That's the crux of the problem. Standard calculus, the stuff based on smooth changes, breaks down completely. Your standard chain rule for derivatives doesn't apply.
So you need a new kind of calculus.
You need Ito's lemma. This is arguably the single most important tool in mathematical finance. Think of it as the chain rule for randomness.
The chain rule for chaos. I like that.
It gives you the precise mathematical rule for figuring out how a function of a randomly moving variable changes over an infinitesimally small amount of time.
So it lets you handle the calculus despite the underlying randomness?
It's the mathematical engine that makes continuous time finance possible. Without Ito's lemma, the whole field basically stops.
Wow. Okay. So once you have Ito's lemma, what does that unlock?
It unlocks the ability to derive the governing equation for derivative prices. The famous Black-Scholes partial differential equation, or PDE.
Ah, Black-Scholes. People have heard of that.
Right. It's a differential equation that describes exactly how the price of a derivative should change over time and as the underlying stock price changes in order to remain consistent with that no arbitrage principle.
And didn't they get a Nobel Prize for this?
Scholes and Merton did, yes. Black had sadly passed away by then. And while the formula that comes from solving that PDE for simple European options is famous,
the real practical magic is maybe something else.
In many ways, yes. The most crucial day-to-day output from the Black-Scholes framework are the risk sensitivity measures known as the Greeks.
Right. Delta, gamma, vega, theta, rho. I've heard those terms.
Exactly. These aren't just abstract symbols. They are the dashboard indicators for traders. Delta, for example, tells you how much the option price changes for a $1 move in the stock.
Which tells you exactly how much stock you need to buy or sell to hedge your position.
That's delta hedging. It's dynamic risk management in action, derived directly from the model. Mm-hmm. Gamma tells you how fast delta changes. Vega tells you sensitivity to volatility changes. Theta is time decay.
So they're the practical tools for managing the risk that the model describes.
Absolutely essential. But, and Joshi is very clear on this, you must understand the nuance and the limitations.
Ah, the assumptions.
Yes. The basic Black-Scholes model assumes things like constant interest rates, and more importantly, constant volatility of the underlying asset.
Which never happens in the real world, right? Volatility is always changing.
Always. So a sophisticated user, a good quant, needs to know these assumptions inside out, because that's precisely where the model can lead you astray, especially during market stress or crashes. Model risk is real.
Okay, so the basic model has limits, and sometimes you have derivatives that are just way too complicated for a nice formula anyway.
Exactly. That leads us to the necessity of numerical methods. For many derivatives, especially complex exotic options.
What makes them exotic?
Their payoff might depend on the average price over the last month, or maybe they knock out and become worthless if the price hits a certain barrier, or they're based on multiple underlying assets, things like that.
Okay, much more complex than a simple call or put.
Right. For those, there's usually no neat, tidy mathematical formula like Black-Scholes. You have to find the price using computational power.
And that's where things like Monte Carlo come in.
That's one of the main workhorses, Monte Carlo simulation. The basic idea is surprisingly simple, conceptually.
Okay.
You just use a computer to simulate thousands, or often millions, of possible random paths that the stock price could follow in the future based on your model assumptions.
Like running millions of possible future histories.
Exactly. For each simulated path, you calculate what the derivative's payoff would be at expiration. Then you discount that payoff back to today's value.
And then?
You just average up all those discounted payoffs from your millions of paths. The law of large numbers says that average should converge to the true expected value under those risk-neutral probabilities we talked about.
So it's like brute force estimation using random trials.
Pretty much. The real art in practice isn't just running the simulation, it's doing it efficiently. Using clever statistical tricks, variance reduction techniques to get a reliable answer with fewer simulations, because computational time is money.
Makes sense. What's the other main numerical method?
The other big one is using finite difference methods. This approach tackles the problem differently. Instead of simulating paths forward in time,
you work backward.
You work backward from the expiration date. You set up a grid representing possible stock prices and time steps. You know the derivative's value for sure at expiration. It's just its payoff formula.
Right.
Then, using a discretized version of the Black-Scholes PDE, you step backward in time, calculating the derivative's value at each earlier time step and price point on the grid all the way back to today.
Huh. Why work backward?
It's particularly useful for pricing American-style options.
The ones you can exercise early.
Exactly. Because as you step backward through the grid, at each point you can check, is the value of holding the option greater than the value of exercising it right now? If exercising is better, you update the value on the grid accordingly. Monte Carlo struggles with that early exercise feature.
Ah, okay, so different tools for different problems.
Definitely. And throughout all this technical detail, Joshi consistently circles back to some really important, almost philosophical themes.
Yeah, what are the big takeaways, the core messages woven through the book?
Well, the first one is definitely this constant tension and need for balance between theory and practice.
We touched on that. Elegant math isn't enough.
Not at all. It's worthless if it can't be turned into something that works reliably, fast, and within the constraints of the actual business. Practicality often has to trump pure mathematical sophistication. You have to make approximations, but you need to understand them.
Right. What else?
The second is a real paradigm shift in thinking. Pricing is replication, not prediction.
Say that again.
Pricing is replication, not prediction. Your job as a quant isn't crystal ball gazing. It's not about forecasting where the market will go.
It's about building that riskless hedge.
It's about structuring things, using dynamic hedging to eliminate the uncertainty you can eliminate. It's a fundamentally different way of viewing finance. It's about structure, not prediction. That's profound, I think.
It really is a different mindset. And the third theme,
the critical importance of understanding model risk and limitations. Joshi hammers this home.
Being aware of where the tools fail.
Yes. Knowing the assumptions, knowing where the model is weak, knowing what scenarios might break it, that's often more valuable than just knowing the equations themselves. It requires humility, acknowledging that even the most complex models are just simplified versions of reality.
That feels like a lesson that applies way beyond finance, too.
Oh, absolutely. Anytime you use a complex model for a real-world system.
So the book also has some really quotable lines, doesn't it? Core ideas that stick with you.
It does. They really capture his practical philosophy. Here's one. The most sophisticated mathematical model is worthless if it cannot be implemented reliably or explained clearly to those who must use it.
Utility and clarity. The value isn't just in the math, it's in making it usable and understandable.
Precisely. Or this one, reinforcing the foundation. No, arbitrage is not just a mathematical assumption. It is the economic principle that makes quantitative finance possible.
It grounds the whole thing in economic reality, not just abstract math. Makes it feel less arbitrary.
Definitely. And then there's the cautionary note. Understanding a model's limitations is often more important than understanding how it works.
Focus on the failure points. Be your own model's biggest critic, in a way.
You have to be. And maybe one more. Linking back to the practical side. Computational efficiency is not just a technical consideration. It determines whether a mathematical model can be used in practice.
Speed isn't a nice to have. It's a fundamental requirement for the model to even exist in the real world.
Exactly. If it takes too long to run, it's useless for trading or real-time risk management.
So how does all this theory and these principles translate into the real world? We mentioned traders using the Greeks.
Right. Delta hedging is a huge one. Traders constantly adjust their positions based on delta to stay market neutral on their option books.
But it goes beyond Wall Street, right?
Oh, absolutely. Think about corporate treasurers. An airline company, for example, faces massive risk from fluctuating jet fuel prices.
Yeah, that could wipe out their profits.
So they use options on oil futures, complex derivatives, priced using these very models to lock in their fuel costs, effectively hedging that business risk.
Okay, so it's used for managing real operational risks.
Definitely. Or a multinational corporation that earns revenue in euros but reports profits in dollars. They face currency risk. They'll use currency options and forwards priced with these methods to hedge that exposure.
And risk management departments and banks.
Heavily reliant on this. They use Monte Carlo simulations, based on these principles, to calculate things like value at risk, VAR, estimating potential losses under adverse market conditions. It's crucial for stress testing, regulatory compliance. It permeates modern risk management.
So the applications are incredibly broad.
They really are. And I think the underlying insight about balancing complexity with clarity, understanding limitations, that's valuable way beyond finance. Any field using complex quantitative models can learn from that.
So wrapping up, what's the one thing that really stands out for you from diving back into Joshi's work?
For me, it's probably that sheer conceptual power of risk-neutral pricing. The ability to step into this imaginary, simplified world to solve the problem, knowing the answer is correct, back in our complex reality. It just feels like a stroke of genius. It's such a clean, powerful piece of logic.
I agree. That's pretty mind-blowing. For me, maybe it's the journey itself. Seeing how you start with a simple idea like no arbitrage in a two-step world and how that logic scales up through Ito's lemma into this incredibly sophisticated machinery that powers global markets. It's quite an intellectual arc.
It really is. And Joshi was just masterful at guiding you along that arc, always keeping one foot in the rigorous theory and the other firmly planted in practical reality.
Yeah.
He really did bridge that gap.
Which leads us, I guess, to our final provocative thought for you, the listener. Perhaps the most valuable takeaway isn't a formula, but that shift in perspective we talked about, moving away from trying to predict the future.
Where will the market go?
And instead asking a structural question. Given no arbitrage, what must the price be right now to prevent a risk-free profit? That shift from prediction to structure, that really is the foundation of modern quantitative finance. Something to think about. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.